Welcome to Groundwire Community Radio News, brought to you by contributors from community radio stations across Canada. This episode of Groundwire was produced at CJSF 90.1 FM at SFU Burnaby on the traditional unceded homeland of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. I am your host, Charlotte Farrell.
And I am your co-host, Desiree.
On today's show...
And the hereditary chiefs expressed the following directives to the RCMP: that police stand down and refrain from enforcing the injunction order until nation-to-nation talks can occur with the provincial and federal governments.
The 22,000 square kilometer pristine wilderness that the pipeline companies want to trample on and destroy for us. Our land is our life.
At the end of the day, we're all fighting the same Canada. We're all fighting the same RCMP. We're all fighting the same policy. If that happened here, I know that they'd have our back.
But first, here are the headlines. Our first headline comes from CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on the occupied Anishinaabe Aking, the homeland of the Métis Nation and the historical territory of the Nahanawak and the Nakota.
Picketing workers at Regina's Co-op refinery complex continue to stand their ground more than 50 days after being locked out by the employer following failed negotiations to arrive at an agreement over pension benefits. Kevin Bittman, the president for Unifor Local 594, which represents refinery workers, explained in an interview on the CKUW program Rank and File Radio, the Prairie Edition, that what's at stake is a pension plan which would see the workers receive diminished benefits while the refinery is raking in robust profits.
So they either want to gut our defined benefit pension plan and change the formula, which would take, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars out of people's pensions, or make a switch to a defined contribution plan that, again, you know, people would be out of money at like 70 years old. So, you know, the fight is pretty massive and our members understand what's on the line. So, you know, to walk a picket line for less money, it's worth it in the end.
On January 20th, Regina police had been called on to enforce an injunction preventing the picketing workers from blocking vehicles entering or exiting the refinery site for more than 10 minutes at a time. 14 people, including Unifor National President Jerry Diaz, were arrested that day. Representatives of other labor bodies, including Canadian Labor Congress President Hassan Youssef, have since paid a visit to the picket line to express their support and solidarity for the workers. More information on the issues can be found at www.unifor594.com. That headline was provided by Michael Welch, based on reporting from Emily Leadham of rankandfile.ca. For more in-depth coverage, visit Rank and File Radio, the Prairie Edition, on SoundCloud.
Our next headline comes from CKUT 90.3 FM. In so-called Montreal, the traditional and unceded territory of the Ganegahaga, one of the founding nations of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy.
This past Friday, January 17th, McGill's Education Undergraduate Society went on an official two-day strike opposing Bill 21 around noon and marched to the Ministry of Immigration to voice their concerns.
It would be so easy to just take this off. I could blend in with the crowd, but this girl happens to be damn proud, living my motto that what's in a head is more important than what's on it.
Yes. Yes.
Our progressive society, fighting for liberty, celebrating diversity, now implementing hypocrisy.
So my name is Tatum Archon. I am part of EDUS, which is the Education Undergraduate Society of McGill. I am one of the co-organizers of the strike today. Bill 21 it's a bill that discriminates against minorities in Quebec. It means to me that there are some people uncomfortable with different cultures in this province, and it means that they're willing to go to any extent to make this province less multicultural.
Bill 21 reflects a lot of fear. This bill represents a government that's taking advantage of fears, and instead of showing the leadership that's necessary to lead people out of fear, is giving in to this demand to fight back against anything that threatens to change the, you know, sacred culture of Quebec.
You were listening to organizers and participants from Friday's demonstration protesting CAC's discriminatory Bill 21. The event concluded with a rally and then a march to the Ministry of Immigration, where participants voiced their concerns, primarily that Bill 21 disproportionately impacts people who may already be marginalized.
Many thanks to CKUT's Noor Daoud for that report. Our next headline comes from Catherine Fisher of CJLY on Sinaik's traditional territory.
The Yellowhead Institute, an Indigenous-led research center based at Ryerson University in Toronto, has released a brief called Reclaiming Indigenous Place Names, which concludes that reverting to Indigenous place names will be an important step in the process of reclaiming Indigenous knowledge and territories. Indigenous place names represent important historical events and legal principles. They can convey teachings on how to live in good relations with others and the land. As a number of Indigenous scholars have pointed out, there is a strong connection between the re-establishment of Indigenous place names and the revitalization of Indigenous languages and cultures. The authors of the brief, Christina Gray and Daniel Rook, have four recommendations for policymakers. 1. Empower Indigenous government bodies to create public policies and processes that lead to the recognition of Indigenous place names. 2. Recognize the connection between language and land by including place name initiatives in federal, provincial, and municipal policies, maps, and signs related to Indigenous place names. Recognize the connection between language and land by including place name initiatives in federal, provincial, and municipal policies, maps, and signs related to Indigenous place names. 3. At all levels, work with the local Indigenous nations to re-establish Indigenous toponyms and respect Indigenous jurisdiction and priorities concerning these matters. And 4. Provide funding to Indigenous nations in their initiatives regarding Indigenous place names.
That's it for the headlines. We'll be right back.
Ghosts inside of other ghosts, the soul of the town, packed up and gone, taking with it the memories now stored in basement photo albums, out of place, buried on marked graves, washed away as the river rises.
You are listening to Groundwire Community Radio News, available online at www.groundwirenews.ca.
You just heard Ghosts by Only a Visitor, live from CJSF Studio 6 from the album Technicolor Education. You just heard Ghosts by Only a Visitor from the album Technicolor Education.
Now it's time for our feature stories.
The week of January 7th to January 12th was declared a week of international solidarity. After BC Supreme Court Justice Marguerite Church granted an injunction against members of the Wet'suwet'en Nation who have been stewarding and protecting their traditional territories from destruction by multiple pipelines, including the Coastal GasLink's CGL liquefied natural gas pipeline. Hereditary chiefs of all five Wet'suwet'en clans had rejected the decision and issued and enforced their own eviction of CGL's workers from the territory on January 4th. Rallies sprang up across Canada in support of the Wet'suwet'en and Indigenous title. On this week's episode of Groundwire, we highlight some of these actions and the activism around it. We first profile one of the West Coast actions. Here is a report from Violetta McCree of CJSF at SFU Burnaby on the traditional unceded homeland of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations.
The Unist'ot'en Camp called for a week of solidarity starting on January 7th against the Coastal GasLink liquid natural gas pipeline that is being forced through their territories and against the injunction by the courts that have criminalized Wet'suwet'en law and land defenders. In response, rallies, marches, and blockades were organized across Canada and internationally in support. In Vancouver, thousands marched in the streets and listened to speeches given by Indigenous activists, land defenders, and hereditary chiefs. Natalie Knight, one of the organizers of the march, read the most recent communication from the Hereditary Chiefs of Wet'suwet'en.
And the Hereditary Chiefs expressed the following directives to the RCMP: that police stand down and refrain from enforcing the injunction order until nation-to-nation talks can occur with the provincial and federal governments to address infringements to Wet'suwet'en rights and title. Secondly, that the remote detachment established by the RCMP on Wet'suwet'en territory be immediately removed.
Removed!
Third, that no force or lethal weapons be used against Wet'suwet'en people and our supporters. Fifth, that RCMP refrain from preventing Wet'suwet'en people and guests from accessing territories. Currently, the RCMP has advised local helicopter companies not to fly into Unist'ot'en territory, endangering the safety of Wet'suwet'en people and guests at the Gedimden access point and the Unist'ot'en village. There's two more. That Wet'suwet'en people must not be forcibly removed or evicted from their own unceded territories. And finally, they urge that Wet'suwet'en people and supporters remain peaceful on the front lines.
The Wet'suwet'en people describe their laws as a way of sustainably managing their territories and relations with one another and the world around them that has worked for millennia to keep their territories intact. They argue that the ongoing criminalization of this law is part of the ongoing genocide of Indigenous peoples, as well as contradicting politicians' statements of commitment to reconciliation and environmental protection. The Wet'suwet'en Hereditary Chiefs issued all CGL employees and contractors an eviction notice and were present to monitor and ensure their removal from the land. At this time, the RCMP have set up an exclusion zone around the land defenders' checkpoints and Unist'ot'en village, preventing further supplies from being delivered. They have also admitted to surveilling the camps by air. At this time, BC Premier John Horgan has yet to meet with the Hereditary Chiefs, even though he recently visited a CGL facility in Kitimat, BC. Further information and updates can be found at unist'ot'en.camp. For CJSF 90.1 FM on the unceded territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples, I'm Violetta McCree.
Thanks to Violetta McCree of CJSF for that report.
CKUT reported on the demonstration in Montreal on the traditional and unceded territory of the Kanegahaga, one of the founding nations of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy.
On Sunday, January 19th, dozens of people gathered outside of Metro Park to demonstrate their support for the Wet'suwet'en Indigenous Nation. The Wet'suwet'en Nation is defending its sovereignty on the land it has always occupied in so-called British Columbia from the Coastal GasLink pipeline project, in a crisis becoming increasingly tense as the RCMP has set up exclusion zones outside of the camps that reoccupy that land, threatening to cut off food, supplies, and eyes on the situation. We will now hear some speeches from the event covering the current events, the stakes of this crisis, and more solidarity actions to come. We will now hear a speech from Wet'suwet'en activist Marlene Hale.
Red Chiefs, they will always oppose the pipeline project that threatens the health and well-being of people who live in the territory which they have ceded or surrendered. In the Supreme Court of Canada in 1997, we know that the famous Damalgam Youth case gave such a lot that right to them. But people still don't have those. They have the documents, but they are not abiding by it. When they did speak to Fani Down a week ago, they finally had some sort of hope that they would be sitting down talking with the RCMP commissioner. They mentioned to her, she was a woman, that how deeply traumatized what had just happened to our people last year on January the 7th. We don't want a repeat of this. We don't want assault rifles coming in when we're only holding a feather. And our protecting what our parents, grandparents won for us through the Damalgam Youth case and Gestewe court case that gives us the 22,000 square kilometer pristine wilderness that the pipeline companies want to trample on and destroy for us. Our land is our life. This is very important. Our livelihood, everything we stand for is land-based. Our language, our foods, sustenance, some wild animals clothe us, medicinal plants for our health and berries. Wild salmon is the best there ever is. And this is why we say no, and we will always say no. Our relationship to the land is a physical representation of our spirituality. When the police commissioner we thought was listening They spoke for 4 hours, and the police commissioners, they went away and they had a discussion. They came back, so it made the discussion almost 6 hours. But what they came back with, it was more horrific when they put up the 72-hour, as you see what is going on now. They've now blockaded it. Indigenous people are people. We deserve equal treatment. We deserve the right to our land, the right to our water, and the right to peacefully protest, which is what we are doing today.
We will now hear Al Harrington, an Ojibwe resident of Gunasatage, speak of his 15-day hunger strike he lived in October to bring about a resolution to land theft of development in Gunasatage on Ganyimbahaga land.
This is actually my first talk of the year since the hunger strike. It was 15 days, and it was to for the people of Gunasatage, because they've been doing an ongoing fight to get recognized with the traditional laws that are in place, you know. 1 year ago, they came up, and we blockaded the hill to show solidarity for Marlene's community and nation. It was very peaceful. We're going to be doing another... I created another event. Now, it's February the 2nd. It's called Piper Roll Tango Charlie. The government, and I mean the government, is the one that created this problem so that we, as First Nation people, we can fight among one another. And it's like that in your system, you know? And that needs to stop, you know? We, the people, need to wake up. And we need to stand together.
Listeners can learn more about the current situation and the best ways to take action at unistoten.camp. That is unistoten.camp. On Solidarity Actions in Montreal, an email has been set up to help facilitate such events. That is Solidarite, Solidarite. Wet'suwet'en, SCMTL, at riseup.net.
That report was supplied by Rian Adamian and the CKUT News Collective, with editing assistance from Michael Welch of CKUW. Finally, we hear a report on Winnipeg's mobilization, as provided by Michael Welch of CKUW.
On January 10th at high noon, community members in Winnipeg descended on the iconic downtown intersection of Portage and Main to take part in a round dance dedicated to supporting the Wet'suwet'en. The Winnipeg action was organized by members of Aboriginal Youth Opportunities, or AYO, a group led by Indigenous youth and their helpers and normally concerned with stopping violence in the city's troubled North End neighborhood. CKUW met with two AYO organizers to get their take on their action and what motivated them to put it together.
Kakike, Dishnakas, Anishinaabe, Kwin and Dao, Benesi Dodem, Poplar River Dunji, Shegwa, Winnipeg. Hello, my name is Kakike Thundersky. I am Anishinaabe from Poplar River, First Nation, and Winnipeg, and I am part of the Thunderbird Clan.
Hi, my name is Ryan Armstrong. I am a 20-year-old youth from the North End.
I think it was exactly a year that day. We did a solidarity round dance for Wet'suwet'en the year before when the RCMP went and raided their blockade and arrested some of the land and water defenders out there. So this time we just basically did the same thing, but it was a lot colder and the police ended up showing up and blocking off the roads for us, so our message wasn't getting across to people. We wanted to cause a little bit of a disruption just to get some attention from people and get the message across. So then we just decided to take over the BMO bank for a little bit. We did a round dance in their lobby just to catch some people off guard and just to make sure that the message got across to as many people, as many bystanders, just people walking by, so that they could see the message. Something that definitely stands out would be the amount of people that showed up. That day was freezing, and we held space for about an hour, despite the cold. So that's something that definitely stood out for me.
I'd have to agree with Kak. The amount of people that just stuck with us and decided to stick it out during the cold and near frostbite at some points. Some people were a little concerned, but and just the fact that we decided to move at one point. We were in the middle of Portage in Maine, and then we just kind of had the idea to move to Bank of Montreal, and everyone was super supportive of that idea and followed us, and yeah, it was a successful round dance and definitely got some people's attention.
Okay. At the end of the day, we're all fighting the same Canada. We're all fighting the same RCMP. We're all fighting the same policy. If that happened here, I know that they'd have our back. Like here in Manitoba, we have hydro that's polluting our waters, and we need to show solidarity, like all from one coast to the other coast.
The Wet'suwet'en people, they're not just fighting their own fight. They have mentioned on their own accounts multiple times that they're doing this for everyone, for future generations. And I have nephews, I have family that I want to continue on for a long time. And if if we don't keep fighting these fights, then there'll be nothing left for us to live on. The land will be gone, the land will be desecrated. And I just think it's so important to support them as people, but also to join them, because that's our only hope for surviving the future.
This summer, I got the opportunity to actually travel down to Wet'suwet'en and stay with them for a little bit. And I got to see the land that they were protecting. And the land is so pristine and beautiful. The water is so clear. You can just fill up your water bottle and drink it straight from the water. And that's at risk right now. I know in Victoria, not here, they did an occupation of John Horgan's office until he would speak with the hereditary chiefs and the people of Wet'suwet'en. They arrested 14 youth. I encourage people to get creative and show solidarity for those 14 youth who got arrested. They were violently dragged out by the police, and they were called trespassers. But they weren't trespassing. Canada's trespassing. The RCMP is trespassing. CGL is trespassing. So I really encourage everyone to show support for that, whether it's donating money or just writing your local MP, writing letters, calling people, being annoying. They're facing a media blackout right now, those 14 youth. And visibility keeps us safe. So share as much as you can. If you see anything relating to the issue, share it on your social media. Visibility keeps us safe.
Listeners in Winnipeg can keep track of AO and future solidarity actions. Follow them on social media at AYO Movement.
You're listening to Groundwire Community News, broadcasting from coast to coast to coast and available online at www.groundwirenews.ca.
Now, it's time for our community radio report.
The National Campus Community Radio Association's 2020 Station Managers Summit was held January 18th and 19th, hosted in Winnipeg, Manitoba, on occupied Anishinaabeg Aking, the homeland of the Métis Nation and the historical territory of the Nahiowak and the Nakoda, by 93.7 CJNU, Nostalgia FM.
I'm Robin Erickson. I'm the program coordinator for CJSF.
You recently attended the Station Managers Summit in Winnipeg.
Hosted by CJNU, which is Nostalgia Radio, a community station in Winnipeg.
What were your expectations heading into the summit?
I've been to the Station Managers Summit a few times in the past. It often occurs to me that, you know, as sort of volunteer and grassroots organizations, even as station managers, the leadership at radio stations is very collaborative. And so I was hoping that as the management, we would have some discussions about best practices and just have an opportunity to connect with each other, because often our jobs are kind of unique. You know, there's maybe one campus or community station in a community. And so as much as what we do as the not-for-profit managers is different because of the industry that we're in, and we have specific needs and specific restrictions and regulations and things like that.
Was there anything that stood out from the weekend?
Yeah, we had a woman whose name escapes me at the moment.
The presenter was Mena Gainpal Singh, CEO of Friends of the Canadian Human Rights Museum.
And she came to talk to us about fundraising. And as much as I've sat through fundraising seminars and talks, it's always really great to have certain things reinforced. And she was an excellent presenter and really led us through what it means to make a case for support and how you do that and how you should be talking to your audience and those kinds of things. So for most of us in the campus community sector and even for community stations, we do fundraising on air. And whether you're doing it on the air or whether you're doing it in person for a museum, the sort of nuts and bolts of it is the same. And it's always really good reinforcement. So I enjoyed that a lot.
Was there anything that surprised you about the summit?
Yeah, there were some presentations on some webinars that the National Campus and Community Radio Association has put up for members. And they are really, you know, the ones that we were led through anyways, look so complete. Not that I'm surprised that they didn't do their due diligence and, you know, make something that was really a resource for stations, but I was really impressed by the thoroughness and the sort of level of information and links and that kind of stuff that were available to us as stations. So I'm excited when they actually launch the most recent one, which is about accessibility, because the Accessible Canada Act is coming into effect, and that will affect all of the organizations that are operating in Canada, including radio stations like us.
You attended as CGSF's programming coordinator, not as a station manager. Did you feel that your experience was different than a station manager who might have gone?
I don't think so. I think it changes the conversation a little bit, but there was a surprising number of program coordinators or program directors from other stations, and also some people who weren't part of the management of stations. They were there as part of the accessibility committee for the board, and they were meeting specifically about some things and participated in the meetings. So it was a mixed group for sure.
Do you have anything you would say to people who are considering going to the next station manager summit?
Yeah, take every opportunity that you can to mix and mingle with your cohort and with your peers, because they're smart, creative people. And, you know, it's like going to a radio conference as a staff or a volunteer. It kind of rejuvenates your energy and really gets you pumped up for making radio and doing the things that we do, which can sometimes in an administrative capacity seem kind of droll and mundane.
Thanks to Robin Erickson, programming coordinator at CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, BC, on the unceded ancestral territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Coquitlam Nations. You can find more information about the NCRA and the Station Manager Summit at ncra.ca. I'm Jesse Wensloff from CJSF.
That was our community radio report.
That's it for this edition of Groundwire, produced at CJSF 90.1 FM at SFU Burnaby on the traditional unceded homeland of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations.
Headlines this week were written by Michael Welsh, Noor Daoud, and Catherine Fisher. We also thank Emily Leadham, Violetta McCree, Michael Welch, Jesse Wensloff, and Rian Adamian for their contributions. Music this week was by Only a Visitor.
I have been your host, Charlotte Farrell.
I have been your co-host, Desiree.
Tune in again to hear Groundwire on your local community radio station or download at groundwirenews.ca. Thanks for tuning in.